doing? It's Zach Kowski.
Adam Henry.
Bobby Jones.
Jeff Jarrett.
Joe Siddle.
TJ Laramie. And
Holy Mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
Yo, what's good? My name is Jake DeMore, and thank you for downloading and streaming this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast. Wind City Sports is Windsor's only sports radio program and podcast, live on CJAM 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit every Thursday at 12:30. You can hear every episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast on the brand new Border City Podcast Network, on windcitysports.com, and wherever you get your podcasts, including iTunes and Spotify. We also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. We'll talk about that at the end of the show, as we normally do. But today is Thursday, March 21st, 2019, and it is episode 137 of Wind City Sports. Right now, today, I'm actually at Central Combat Sports, and co-hosting with me this week is a former guest of the show, a local boxing coach, and a former CJammer, too, actually, Cedric Benn.
How are you guys? I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I just figured we would, you know, I need some help sometime. You know, we can just kind of shoot the breeze about some stuff that's been going on. And to kick things off, we were at the fights just a couple weeks ago. Like, everyone who listens to the show, if anyone does, it's probably going to be familiar with you through your interview. Mm-hmm. Go back and listen to episode 100 with Cedric. But, last Saturday we're at Central Park Athletics at the YMCA for BTC 5 Typhoon. We have the results here printed out. We had 8 fights. We had some local guys. Overall, I thought, like, they had a great turnout. It was a little bit of a weird, like, venue at times, but I think overall they were pretty successful.
Yeah, it was. It was a pretty good turnout. I got there, I think, about the fourth fight. It was a stand-up fight between Joe Pentagoose and Lorenzo Banks. It was good because they were standing up most of the time. I appreciate, I'm a boxing coach, so I appreciate the MMA, the ground and submission and stuff like that. The next one was Chuck Mady and...
So you came in, had that one fight, then there's intermission.
Yes, there was an intermission.
And like that one fight was good, like you were saying, with that Joe guy. That's a hard last name to pronounce. I wasn't even going to try and tackle that. But that was a good fight. There was a couple of not so good fights and a couple of good ones. I think that one with Joe stood out. Everyone was...
Definitely,
same thing.
Definitely. When the crowd's on their feet, jumping, going crazy. That was an exciting fight. On to the Chuck Mady fight. I think my whole main thing about the whole the touch and go. You touch gloves before when the referee's giving you the instructions. I think that should be the ending of the touching gloves there. I understand people tell me it's for the respect thing, but. That whole there's a reason why there's a name for it called touch and go, because that's what could happen. I'm actually surprised it didn't happen more. I know, sportsmanship wise or fighting ethics wise, you shouldn't do it. But I mean that's just part of the game. I mean, and that was so he did that touch and go thing, took him to the ground and finished him off, but. So my whole thing is that touch and go, that they should either outlaw it, or you got to understand that you can't come out all like relaxed, just assuming that the other person is just going to be respectful. Yeah.
There's no like official rule for it, basically what you're saying, like rather get rid of it or whatever. But for people that don't understand what happened, basically they touch gloves before the bell rings. The bell rings again, they go to touch gloves, and the guy throws a jab and takes him down, knocks him out. Wins the fight.
And he was out, which is an unfortunate thing. A local guy fighting in front of his local fans, wanted to put on a good show, and had to go out like that. But you just have to be prepared. As soon as that bell rings, you can't be relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that has seen the fight or was there, whatever, you can be the judge. But I don't want to say it was a cheap shot. The one thing I keep comparing it to, and as bad as it sounds, CM Punk's first fight ever, the first thing the guy did was that and won, right? So it's like I'm not saying that Chucky Mady's on CM Punk's level, but if it happens in the UFC,
it can happen on any level.
Yeah, so. And if those weren't overturned, then watch this, right?
Yeah.
But, we had him as a hometown guy. TJ did not end up fighting. Do you know why he didn't make weight?
An unfortunate injury. That's just a part of the sport, He's, he's still young, still has a lot of years left in the game. Hopefully he doesn't rush back too soon. I hope he recovers fast, and to see him back in a cage soon.
Yeah. And the two, like, the two top fights were good, from what I remember. Obviously, Kyle's was good.
Yes.
We'll get into that. Two good fights at the end, from what
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, I could speak a little bit more on the on those two fights, because they're a little bit more stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, the main difference that I see in... And, you know, that between the top fighters and just, like, the champions or just the regular fighters is, well, obviously, people are going to say I'm more biased, obviously, because I'm a boxing coach. But I just, whoever is better at that, obviously, I mean, makes sense. If you have better stand-up than your opponent, you'll, you know, you'll do better. But that was the main difference in those fights. Kyle Prepelec, very good southpaw. You know, he could, you know, probably have a nice boxing career if he wanted to. Fought against a tough opponent. Yes, he did.
He really did.
Yes, he did. Fought a tough opponent, Cody Fisber. Did he used to fight in the UFC, they said?
I don't know. It sounds familiar. I should look that one up. I don't have internet here. But his opponent dropped out. I see at the bottom, I printed out just... this is from Tapology, and it actually has, like, all the canceled fights. Oh. But I should have printed the whole thing. I didn't realize that until I got here. So it shows, like, this guy here had a staph infection. That's why that didn't go down.
Wow.
So, like, I don't know, there was a couple fights that were dropped and stuff, but I didn't know why, right?
Yeah, 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 that happens in the fight business, man, you know, just, you know, little freak injuries during training happened to one of our soldiers here at Central. Megan was getting ready for her to get back in the cage and just had a, just little freak accident, hurt her, you know, just caught her hand against the cage and had to have surgery to repair that. But I know she's mentally strong and she'll be back soon.
Yeah.
But it's just an unfortunate part of the game. Injuries happen sometimes. You know, you never go into a fight 100%. There's always going to be a little bit of bumps and bruises, whether it's a, you know, sore joint muscle or, so, you know, sore joint or a pulled muscle or something like that. So you just want to be as prepared as you can.
Yeah. And it's a big part of the game, too, though. A lot of people have to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just what you're doing, obviously, you can get hurt at any time.
Exactly.
So we had that. But I think overall it was good. Like I say, the way it was kind of weird was just them walking out. Like literally, they changed in the hockey rink dressing rooms. Had to walk from the arena. Like if you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. Had to walk from the arena to the YMCA and then through the crowd, through like literally right through the crowd.
To be honest, I've seen worse situations.
Oh, for sure, that's, for sure. Like I said, that's my small complaint is that, and like you said, like it was. You said it was good that it was on their feet for you, but it was also good because we can actually see.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Aside
exactly.
from that, like you kind of anticipate that stuff, but you know, to make it a perfect event, just
yeah, you know. And it's good. Like they had the stage a little bit more elevated than most places do. It's important to have that for when they go on the ground because then it's just hard for people to see. Even not, and that's not just at the lower level. I remember when I went to go watch the UFC. Even when they're on the ground, it's just hard to see.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
no matter what.
But anyways, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing the ground game. Much respect to all the
that's what
black
I was
belt
try.
Jiu-jitsu guys out there. much respect to the ground game.
That's what I was going to come in and say. Because then you know, there's boxing on the ground and stuff too, right? So
yeah.
Like, aside from like, because sometimes even me when you watch UFC and stuff, it's hard to tell what they're doing on the ground in a jiu-jitsu standpoint or in a grappling standpoint.
Now from being a boxing coach at Central all these years, you know, they usually do the jiu-jitsu after my class, so I stick around and watch. And now when I watch UFC, I'm understanding better what they're doing, so I have a better understanding of it. So I do appreciate it. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's part of the MMA game, and that's what we went there to see.
Randomly today, I was just going through my YouTube thing, and I just randomly picked up to watch Hoist Gracie versus Chemo.
There you go. study some tape.
And I was like, you know, Hoist Gracie, he must be like the god for all the little guys fighting bigger guys in the world, you know,
because
he was one of the first guys to ever, you know, like honestly, it's for little guys to be like, wow, you can actually beat up a bigger guy in a street fight, and they can't just use their you know, their brute strength.
Yep.
If you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you gotta have a little David Goliath sometime. Yeah. All right, man. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the Nationals that are coming up, and we actually have wrestling coming up this weekend. But before we do that, we're going to play our interview for this week. We have Jenny Fedorovich, the producer, and Joshua Reel, the director and writer of the Russian Five documentary about the Detroit Red Wings and their Russian Five players that just tore it up in the 80s. It's screening this Friday, tomorrow, by the time this airs, in Royal Oak, and we'll be there on site. We'll talk more about it with Josh and Jenny, so here we go.
On the phone right now, I have the writers, directors, producers of the Russian Five documentary, Joshua Reel and Jenny Fedorovich. Welcome to Win City Sports.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, yeah. And thank you for having us.
Yes, so, kind of going to be a dual interview here, obviously. So I have some questions kind of for both of you. You guys can kind of take the lead however you'd like, and some individual questions as well. But to get started, I want to know how this all kind of came to be. Were you guys working together from the beginning? Who's going to take credit here? Whose idea was it to kind of get the whole thing started?
Well, I started the project about, I guess, 6.5-7 years ago, while I was living in Austin, Texas at the time. And I grew up, you know, knowing the story. I went through a car accident, which I had 3 surgeries over 6 years. So Vladdy Konstantinov was a really big inspiration for me to kind of persevere through that and go to film school. So I knew I wanted to tell this story. But trying to raise the capital for a documentary about Soviet hockey players in Detroit and Texas was really difficult. So a couple of years ago, I moved back to Detroit with the intention of, you know, trying to find a producing partner to help bring in money on this. And a good friend of mine, Rob, introduced me to Jenny. I met her at her studio, and yeah, you know, I pitched her the project, and whatever I said must have worked, because, you know, she jumped on board and we were able to get the money and jump into production.
It's the important part right there, right?
Yeah.
Jenny, on your end, was it like someone just approached you and kind of with the project? Were you interested in the idea, or what happened there?
So, you know, it was one of those days where I was sitting in my office and I was completely overwhelmed with the amount of projects that were actually on my plate at that point. You know, and on the production studio with a national television project, film, and et cetera. And that morning, I was telling myself that I absolutely cannot look at anything else. And then I got a call from Rob and Chris, who we mutually know and have worked together. And he said, I have a guy who's pitching the Russian Five. And I just sat there. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm going to have to, you know, I knew the guys really well. Just like them, I came here from the Soviet Union around the same time. So I couldn't pass up learning more about who was making this film. And, you know, it was one of those projects that would just be, it needs to get made. So I met Josh. You know, I understood right from the get-go he was the right person to take that project. He was very passionate, very knowledgeable, been working at it, had a great sizzle already done. And I told him at that time, I'm going to take it to one person only. And if that person says yes, it's meant to be, and we're going to go forward, we're going to make this movie. So I ended up taking this to Dan Milstein, who is the agent for Pavel Datsyuk at the time, who is now an agent for many other Russian players. And he came on board as an executive producer. And at that moment, I was like, this is meant to be. We have to make this film. And the rest is history.
That's very cool. No offense, but when we picked up the phone here, I was like, okay, maybe she has some connection here just based off your accent. So were they very inspirational to you? Were you kind of watching around that time, or like, wow, these guys from Soviet Union are just doing their thing here in America?
You know, I don't know if it was inspirational. I was a teenager at the time, but one thing they did do, you know, we came here, we were Russians, it was late 80s. Nobody was very excited or knew about Russian people very much. And what happened is they just actually made us really cool. So I'm very thankful for that. So all of a sudden we ended up being Russian people in Detroit that everybody wanted to talk to because they wanted to know, do we know them? Did we meet them?
Yeah.
Who are they? What are they like? You know, I also played soccer with the guys because they would come in and still play soccer with the Russian community. You know, we went to the same restaurants and they were always just like really down to earth, really cool people that were just a part of our community, but on the other end were this huge hockey superstars, you know?
Very cool. I like to see the personal aspect, all the athletes now, you know, doing the interviews and stuff. So it's very cool.
Yeah.
So both of you, how did this kind of all come to be? Like, I know I'm more of a sports guy. I'm not really into the TV and film side. So once you guys had partnered up, how does it kind of get off the ground? You allocate your budget and start looking at locations, start getting interviews. How does that process work?
Yeah, you know, right away, the first shoot we did once Dan jumped on board was Sergei Fedorov's Hall of Fame induction weekend, where we went to Toronto and picked up a couple of interviews. And then, you know, a month later, Jenny and I, the rest of the team, we were in Moscow interviewing Sergey and both Slavas, and then came back to Detroit, and, you know, then things slowed down as far as scheduling-wise, getting the rest of the people. These players are super busy, you know, in their professional lives. They're not playing hockey anymore, but they're still involved. So, you know, it took a little bit of time to schedule Igor, to schedule Steve Yzerman. But then once you get all that, you know, you start editing, but you're also digging through thousands of hours of archival. So we were kind of juggling all of these different balls at the same time. And, you know, eventually you get to a point where you have enough to start putting together a cut and edit, and then you got to find the right editor, and that's a whole other thing. But eventually we ended up with the perfect team, you know, incredible editor, really great producing team that we put together. And that's really what makes all the difference.
Just finding all those pieces.
Yeah, and filmmaking, people don't realize it's a very complex process. You know, we've had fans from day one kind of yelling at us, when is this coming out, you know, as if we could snap our fingers and put out a film in a year. You know, also independent filmmaking is even more challenging. And as you watch the film, there's a lot of very intricate parts. There's animation. I mean, there's literally all of these moving parts. And to put all of that together and to have it all come together at the end is a very laborious and very intense process that we have been through.
Absolutely. I'm sure that, yeah, it's just a lot of stuff to do, a lot of pieces to the puzzle, right?
Yeah.
It's the hurry up and wait business, you know. You hurry up and get everything together, and then you have to wait for days, weeks, months for the next step to be able to accomplish. So you're just trying to do the best you can and keep as many of the various aspects moving, so that hopefully they're all kind of clicking at the same point, whether it's the animation or, you know, the score. Or, you know, we got Wayne Kramer from the MC5. Score, so that, you know, that was an incredible thing, but that kind of came together in the last couple of months of production. So it's a lot of luck, and it's a lot of like putting yourself in the position to take advantage of the luck, and a ton of hard work. And you just hope that it turns out the way you intended it to when you started out 6 or 7 years earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I see where you're coming from. It's always a lot of work. Can you guys both tell me just briefly, I know you probably both have some extensive backgrounds, but just kind of where have you worked in the film television world, you know, different maybe productions, movies, films, whatever people might be familiar with?
So I own a production company called Arcadius Productions. And we're currently producing our flagship shows called Startup. It's in PBS. It's going into season 7, and we travel across the United States, and we interview entrepreneurs, basically learning about them in depth from what it took to take the first step of the aha moment all the way to getting the money and opening a business. So that's the flagship. I am currently executively producing the story of Cream magazine, the rock and roll magazine that's coming out actually here shortly. It's going to be at the Free Film Festival while it's opening. I produced a film called Cash Only, which is on Netflix. And I've been in the industry for a really long time. I worked on numerous Hollywood pictures that have been in Detroit. You name it, I think I've done it. But at this point, my company is heavily concentrated in storytelling and development on various network television shows and films.
Yeah, and I went to film school at the University of Austin, Texas, and so from there I made a couple short films that got me working in criminal justice stories. So I had produced for PBS Frontline. Was producer on a documentary that we won the Audience Award at South by Southwest a couple of years ago. And the director that I was working on with that really encouraged me to start thinking about films that I wanted to direct myself and not produce other, you know, his work. And this was the first one that I wanted to do. You know, this is the first project that I thought I'm going to take it from idea to the screen as the director. And it's been an incredible learning experience that, you know, we like to joke that after getting through this, we can probably take on any challenge and whatever was thrown. thrown at our way will at least be experienced after this one. But, yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of my professional career working in documentary, specifically criminal justice films.
Very cool for both of you guys. Both, I did a little research on both you and Jenny. I seen you did some Detroit-based stuff, like you had said before, that AMC series Low Winter Sun was based in Detroit. And Josh, yep. I seen the stuff you did with the Humble Broncos. Are you from the Michigan area, and were you a hockey fan? Or
yeah, you know, I grew up in Port Huron, and so I grew up watching the Red Wings. And really, you know, I grew up as a baseball guy, and then what really kind of caught my attention with hockey was, you know, when Sergei Fedorov showed up and started, you know, playing this exciting game, and then Vladdy Konstantinov, and those two guys are kind of what drew my attention away from baseball towards hockey more so, and which was just in time to, you know, become a fan of when the Wings were in the process of becoming incredible, mm-hmm. That dynasty, you know, but early on, and so I kind of got blessed that, you know, I wasn't so into it during the Dead Wings era
exactly
as a young child, you know, but as they started getting good, I started paying attention and getting into it. And a lot of that's, you know, watching it at your grandparents' house on the TV, and that's something that's been really cool, is a lot of people have told us, you know, watching this film, that it reminded them of watching it with their father or their grandfather or their mother or whatever, bringing back those memories of this, like, family experience that people shared the Red Wings with.
It's very cool, man. You know, everyone has a great passion for hockey around here, so it's cool to see these things kind of come to life on the big screen, and I just wanted to know kind of the background, the mentality going into it, you know. And I'm sure, like you said, you guys both have a lot of history here in Detroit, and you're familiar with it, and working on this project, I'm sure you cross paths with a lot of cool people aside from the five themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's in the movie. We got Steve Yzerman, we got Brendan Shanahan, Scotty Bowman, Nick Lidstrom, the Grind Line, I mean, you name it, we were able to get to them. Even Wayne Gretzky is in the film.
So cool.
So it was a really cool experience to get to sit these guys down and talk to them. And, you know, unfortunately, you don't get to geek out as a fan, because mm-hmm. it's like, well, Steve Yzerman's here and he wants to get out of here in an hour, and we've got five pages of questions to get through. So you don't have time to, like, geek out. You just have to, like, plow through it. And then after he's left, you're like, oh, wow, that just happened. That was really cool. So it was an incredible experience, really.
That's very cool, guys. So kind of between the two of you, was there a vision for the movie? Like, was it set to be more of like a biopic, or was it just like a comprehensive story of what these five guys did to each other? Was it more like a story about on the ice or the business aspect or both?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I told Jenny, and I think she can speak to it, but I think this helped convince her that this was the right time and I was the right person to do it, was that I was less interested in what happened on the ice and more interested in what was happening off the ice, mm-hmm. as far as bringing these guys over and the philosophy of, like, should we keep bringing Russians over? Because if we recall, you know, every time that the Wings seemed that they were getting close, they would have playoff disappointments. And the knack about the Russians was they don't play in the playoffs. So, you know, for Jimmy Devolano and Ken Holland to keep going down that road, you know, Scotty Bowman saying, I want Slava Fetisov and I want Igor Larionov, these older veterans, it was risky. Then I wanted to incorporate that, but we also want to incorporate the heart, the locker room stuff. How do these guys come together as brothers and not just as teammates? And how did the Russians acclimate to America? All that human stuff, to me, is far more interesting than what happens on the ice. We know that what happens on the ice is extremely interesting. So I knew that if we could capture that, we would have a really captivating film that tells both sides of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've set out to make a film that's not a hockey film. Mm-hmm. And what we've heard from people that don't like hockey that came to our premieres, people in other cities that frankly don't care about the Wings that came to see the film, it's not a hockey film. You know, it's an ultimate story of Detroit, brotherhood, the fact that you can be a Russian, you can be Swedish, American, Canadian, that when people come together for a common goal, something really beautiful happens. And, of course, the hockey is there, and it's exciting. And I think for the hockey fans, they're going to love this. And I think for a surprise friend, or for a lot of women out there that might necessarily think they're going to go and enjoy this, you know, I am certain that they will. So don't be afraid. Go out there and watch this movie, not as a hockey fan and not as a person who necessarily loves hockey. And I challenge you to do that and tell me how you feel about it after you see it.
Absolutely. Like I said, I like to hear the, you know, the off-ice aspect of a player and personality-wise, right? So I think that's perfect what you guys were doing, and you could tell just based off the trailer that that was kind of how it ended up coming out, was, you know, more of the background story and the off-ice story, but at the same time, you know, that's what they were doing. Anyone can go back and read the history books, but they don't know what was happening off the ice, right?
Right. You know, you can go and the stats tell you one thing, and those are facts, mm-hmm. but there's a truth of what was happening in that locker room and to the team is much more interesting and important. And, you know, we always said this isn't a hockey film. It's about humans who play hockey.
At the end of the day, they're all human, right? And only those humans know what was going on in that locker room, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Did anything kind of evolve or change over time, like in the production of this film? Did you go in with a certain visualization that may have changed? Like, I'm sure it's a learning experience doing a project like this.
Yeah, you know, it took a while to get to the vision, and I think that was sort of the trick, was like, for the most part, the film represents the story that Jenny and I first talked about wanting to tell when we first met, and in a lot of ways, but it's like finding that path. You know, the animation's a good example where Jenny had found this incredible artist who did these amazing paintings that looked like the Soviet propaganda posters, but he couldn't accomplish, you know, the amount of volume that we needed, and then so we had to pivot, and Jenny and our other producer, Raisa, found this other animation company that was able to do very close to what we wanted to do, but even better, and it actually allowed us to open up our palette and expand it and get it closer to what we originally intended, which is like, you know, this sort of Sin City kind of cool comic booky look. And those are the examples where, like, sometimes things just happen that you don't anticipate, but they put you on the right path. And you're blessed when that happens.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, it's a living and breathing thing. So if people think of making something, right, they just have to be really, to be open, to have a mindset that they need to just kind of flow with this river, you know. And I always have a saying, it is what it is, it's happening. So we need to embrace it, and things happen for a reason. So if you're open like that, you know, and me and Josh Olson have this conversation, we had many setbacks in this project. We've learned a lot. And as we faced another roadblock or a challenge or a setback, you know, we would always just say, hey, there's got to be some kind of silver lining from what's happening right now. And all along, maybe we didn't see it at that point, but maybe even it took a year for us to get that silver lining. But at the end of the day, we did get it. So it's open to kind of, you know, you have to be open to what's coming to you and embrace it, basically, even if it seems like it's a gigantic challenge at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there was challenges, and the animation part of it is very drawing, I have to say. But I'm sure the one challenge could have been just over the 7 years that you guys pretty much had started this from, technology had just changed so much. So,
yeah, you know, the archival was a huge challenge as far as, like, you know, you want everything that you can get your hands on. That's a huge challenge because some of the stuff doesn't even exist anymore. You know, all of this took place 20 years ago, and then some of it's behind lock and key in archives where nobody knows what they have, and they don't really want you rummaging through their stuff. So every step of the way was a ginormous challenge. But, you know, that pushes you and it forces you to find creative solutions sometimes. As Jenny said, there's always a silver lining.
Was there a lot of help from the hockey world here? Like, obviously, you guys were interviewing countless coaches and players and stuff, but was everyone, like, receptive to do the interviews, and was anyone reaching out to you, like, wanting to be part of this?
Yeah, you know, I think there was a lot of caution at first about who are you, why, mm-hmm, what are your intentions, how are you going to do this? But as we slowly showed that our intentions were right and we were going to do this right, one by one, everyone kind of got on board, and you know, someone like Scotty Bowman's making time for you, not once but twice, and so that's, you know, you can't ask for better than that.
Yeah, I think we had our champions and believers right off the bat, like people like Darren McCarty, who believed in the story, and Jim Light that believed in Josh before I was even a part of this project. And then some people proceeded with caution, as Josh has mentioned, and then once it started unfolding and people saw that this project is for real, it's very serious, the quality of the film we're making is very good, people started to open up. But in general, I believe we've been embraced really by the hockey community, by the Detroit Red Wings. They premiered our trailer, so we've been very happy with everybody and their help and, you know, how they've come along on this. It
could be overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah,
same
absolutely.
Thing here, you know. It's very cool, though. The whole concept is cool. And, you know, you guys have done a few screenings at, like, film festivals and stuff. We had the one here in Windsor at WIFF, and Jenny was telling me, too. Like, how has the reception been, not only from fans and critics and stuff? Like, I'm not asking, like, how many thumbs ups are you getting, but does it seem like people are coming out of there and enjoying the show?
Yeah, it's been humbling. It's been humbling to have people come up afterwards. And my favorite are the people who come up and say, you know, my husband or my boyfriend or my girlfriend brought me here, and I'm a basketball person, or I'm not a sports person, and wow, I love this movie. And that's when you know you're, like, hitting the right notes and reaching across not just hockey fans, but to all fans, and to see the emotional response that this film gets is truly humbling, you know, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how people respond when anyone can go see it. You don't just have to be in the city where the film festival is playing and luck out and get a ticket before they sell out. Like, you know, although our opening weekend is starting to sell out, so if people want to see it opening weekend, they need to get the tickets now. Otherwise, they have to wait till the following week during the week. It's just been incredible. Really, really has.
Yeah, the reception has been great from fans, from the people that are in the film that have seen the film, which is really the confirmation for us that we captured the story. Because when people in the film say, "Wow, you know, you really captured it," that means a lot to us. And from the fans of the film, of course, people have really enjoyed it. And you know, I don't know if we fully even understand, because we've been so in it and driving this film to come out to the theaters. So I think we'll really get to feel it after the masses will start to see it on this Friday. So, and we're super excited about that. I think it's going to be a little overwhelming for us.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And it kind of, to go back with what you were saying, Josh, that, you know, basketball fans and fans alike were liking it. It alludes to what Jenny was saying earlier about, you know, go watch this film and not be a hockey fan and see how you enjoy it. And obviously that's translating, right?
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully we're bringing new fans to the game of hockey.
Absolutely.
Showing them, you know, what the possibilities of the sport are. It's incredible. You know, there's nothing more exciting than the Stanley Cup playoffs in all professional sports. You know, seriously, the Super Bowl is nothing compared to a, you know, Game 7 overtime. That's
absolutely
the most thrilling thing ever. So hopefully we can bring some new fans to the sport, and people will remember, you know, the history of the Red Wings and how the Red Wings changed the game. I mean, puck possession is now what everyone's trying to do in the NHL, and the Red Wings were the first team to really start that. So, you know, it's been a tough couple seasons, but, you know, this film also reminds you of how long it took them to win the first cup and how many ups and downs and just how hard it really, really is to become a Stanley Cup champion, and how maybe in Detroit we've been spoiled for a little while.
Hey, man, you're talking to a Leafs fan, to be honest. So.
You know how hard it is.
Yeah, I got to respect the Wings for what they've done. I live across the border and everything, but I feel what you're saying, man. I can't argue with anything, really.
Yeah.
But you know, you mentioned your opening weekend. That is not the same as this coming screening at the Royal Oak, right? Can you kind of tell us about opening weekend and what's going on there?
So the opening weekend actually is starting in Port Huron this Wednesday. That's where Josh is from, right, Josh? So there's there's a setup with Perry's Movie House there, but I believe that's completely sold out. There's going to be a meet and greet. And then we're just jumping into our opening weekend. So Friday night, we have a red carpet charity event. All of the proceeds from that are going to Vladimir Konstantinov Special Needs Trust. So there's still a few tickets left. People can go and get them. They're on Eventbrite or on our Facebook. And then starting that Friday, actually, yes, we are across most of Michigan. We're actually in a few other cities. We're in Denver. We're in Colorado Springs. We're going to be playing in Seattle. We're in parts of Illinois and Minnesota, so we're kind of spreading out there. But as early as this Friday, people can get out to the theaters and see the film.
That's awesome, guys. And like we talked about before, I'm going to be there. By the time this airs, it will be tomorrow in Royal Oak at the theater. I'm really looking forward to it. And I thank you guys for taking the time to do this and talking to me about the documentary, how it came to be. It's a really cool story, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the film.
Awesome. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on, and we'll see you at the red carpet.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMore. That was Jenny Fedorovich and Joshua Reel, the directors, writers, and producers of the Russian 5 documentary. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, you should be able to soon. You can actually go over to Royal Oak tomorrow and watch it with me if that interests you for whatever reason. But it's supposed to be in theaters everywhere soon enough. But I'm actually co-hosting again today with Cedric Benn, boxing coach here in Windsor. So we were talking about the MMA fights last week, but we also have some local boxers, obviously, that you've been coaching for a long time, getting into the national ranks now, eh?
Yep. We got nationals coming up in about 6 weeks. This year it is in Victoria, B.C. Oh, it's on the island. Is that the island?
Vancouver Island, sorry?
Vancouver Island. So that's where it is this year.
I guess it's beautiful out there.
Is it? Like, that's a hopefully it's like that when I'm out there too. We got two boxers qualified this year, Marie and Kioma, brother sister, the number one brother sister combo in the country. Kioma won his first national championship last year, so he's going to reclaim his title, and his younger sister Marie is going for her first national championship this year. He's 15, she's 14.
Wow, you're so young doing that. I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
and like you've had a lot of people like come through, and like I'm sure you know kids are just popping up all the time and stuff. But what happened to Hunter? Is he still going strong?
Hunter's just doing his thing. He actually has a fight coming up this Saturday in Quebec against one of the top Quebec guys out there. And then March 30th, he'll be fighting at the main event in London at their club show there. Main event against their guy, Abdullah Judah, who's heading to national. So that should be a good, definitely a good match. If anybody's in the London area, make sure you come out and support.
Absolutely. Do you have eyes on like their opponents and stuff? Like, how do you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, at the open class level, at the novice level, not so much. You know, it's at the novice level, it doesn't really matter. When you're a novice, you really just have to be in better shape than the other person. But when you get to open class, that's when you really have to pay attention to the matchups and the skills, and of course the defense that I always emphasize. You know.
Yeah, man. You keep up with the current boxing and stuff too, right? Like a lot of people have moved on from boxing to UFC and stuff, obviously, right? But man, still so many high class boxers. There's an event this weekend and stuff too, right?
Yes. Just in general, you know, if you're gonna be a top MMA fighter, you need to have good stand up, not just kickboxing, but actually with your hands too, you know. So very
movement, footwork, you know, everything.
Exactly. Speaking out current fights, this past Saturday we had a big match, Earl Spence Jr. versus Mikey Garcia. who was moving up in two weight classes. Now, everyone was assuming, I mean, of course, it's a big jump, two weight classes, but if anybody had the skills to do it, a lot of people predicted Mikey Garcia to do it. I thought he had a chance. I didn't think, I really believe Earl Spence lives up to his nickname, which is the truth. You know, you know, every couple of years there's a new kid that comes up that looks nice earlier on and, you know, kind of phased out. But, you know, every once in a while there is that one person that, you know, looks like they actually have it. And, you know, I seen that he has it a while ago, and he's definitely, well, he's making a name for himself now, but you could just see, he just did his thing, didn't take too many chances, but he still was aggressive. Southpaw, perfect at keeping his distance. For anybody out there that knows, you know, it, just in general, obviously a person that has a longer reach than you would have an advantage, but it's only an advantage if they know how to use it. You know, I say all the time, Mike Tyson was shorter than everybody he fought, but he still out-jabbed everybody he fought because he knew, had to catch jabs and had very good head movement. Earl Spence, he just boxed perfectly. Maintained. Mikey Garcia was just a little bit shorter, arms a little bit shorter. Earl Spence just made sure to keep that distance. 90% of his punches were, well, maybe not 90, maybe probably about 70 to 75% of his punches were at that full distance. But he did close it in with some hooks and uppercuts to you know, to make sure to emphasize the point. He did try to close it out in the 9th, 10th, and 11th. He didn't just try to coast it out like, you know, most people would complain about certain other fighters. But yeah, so Earl Spence, he's the truth.
Is that how you seen it going, though?
Yes. I said, I mean, I never say it's a guarantee. You know, my boy Jesse always wants to bet money on stuff, but because any you know, anybody could get caught, especially if someone has skills. That obviously Garcia had a disadvantage coming up in two weight classes, but he's 39-0 with like 30 knockouts for a reason, because he has the skills, and those weren't, it's not all bums that he fought. He fought some very high competition and did very well. Obviously he's undefeated, did very well against those top level competition. So the one criticism I could give to Garcia's corner is, like, you can't let your pride get in your way of your fighter. Like, if you I think it was the 9th or 10th round, they came, when Garcia came back to the corner, and they asked him, his coach asked him, who's his brother, he said, do you want to continue? I'm thinking to myself, as a coach, like, if you have to ask your fighter, like, if he wants to continue, like, yeah,
that's basically like asking a hockey goalie if they're losing 9-0 if he wants to get pulled. Of course he wants to get pulled after the 5th goal. Yeah. But to bring it up to some other local news we have going on this week, local events, actually, we have some wrestling going on at the St. Clair College Gym. Border City Wrestling presents two nights of Impact Wrestling tapings at St. Clair College, Friday and Saturday. Tickets are still available for both nights. I don't know what you got planned, Cedric, but I'm going to be going on Saturday for sure. They're going to be starting around 7 o'clock. So all your favorite Impact Wrestling superstars will be there, including world champion Johnny Impact, LAX, Moose. He used to play in the NFL. I don't know if you know who he is. Rosemary, and even Tommy Dreamer from ECW. Tons of matches have been announced, though, on BCW's Facebook for both Friday and Saturday. You never know who else could show up there. All right, guys, now it's just me here on the Wind City Sports Podcast. Cedric had to go and teach his boxing class, actually. But I do got to thank him for taking the time to come on the pod and just shoot the shit with me a little bit about some boxing stuff and what else might be going on in Windsor. He might have some more guests, co-hosts in the future. Might be him again, we might not. Who knows, just trying something out new. But now to finish up the podcast, I myself am just going to break down some local sports news, kicking things off with some news on our hometown boy, Mikey DiPietro, who is sharing the David Pinkney Trophy with Ottawa 67's teammate and fellow goaltender, Cedric Andrea, as a duo combined for the OHL's lowest team goal against average. The OHL announced the award on Monday as DiPietro, who was traded to Ottawa by the Spitz back in December, posted the league's best goals against average at 2.40, while Andrea was right behind him with a 2.48 goals against average. That helped Ottawa set a franchise record with 106 points while reaching 50 wins for just the second time in team history. The 19-year-old DiPietro, who was the OHL's goaltender of the year last season, set a new league mark for career shutouts this season with 17 and extended that mark to 19 by the end of the season. He actually accomplished that while he was still with our Spits. Speaking of which, to the liking of some, the Windsor Spitfires have made the OHL playoffs for the 2019 season. They lost in overtime to Sarnia on Friday, but it was enough to secure them 4 points above Erie with that 1 point in that overtime loss to take the eighth seed and final seed to the playoffs. Although they are now set to battle the top team in the conference and the second best in the O, the London Knights. Things kick off with two games in London on Friday, that'd be tomorrow and Sunday. Games 3 and 4 will be here in Windsor at the WFCU Center on Tuesday and Thursday. And finally, the Windsor Express fell 137-118 on Sunday to the Island Storm in the NBL of Canada action in Charlottetown, PEI. Juan Patillo had 26 points to lead the Express, while Chris Jones added 22 against the Storm. I don't have updates on their last two games. Actually, as of the time of recording, they played on Tuesday and Wednesday, two back-to-back games this week. And there's more to come. Check out Twitter and Instagram for results on that. Or you can listen to Wind City Sports Radio. We'll have the updates there. And after that jam-packed week, they will continue as they welcome the Kitchener-Waterloo Titans to the WFCU Center at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. Then on Sunday, the Moncton Magic will come into the WFCU following these games. There is one left at home on March 29th, next Friday, against London. They will wrap up their series in London on the 31st. But that is going to be all this week on Wind City Sports. My name is Drake Damore, and thank you for downloading or streaming this episode. You can hear brand new episodes of the Wind City Sports Podcast every Thursday morning. Wind City Sports Radio airs in Windsor and Detroit at 12:30 p.m. every Thursday. And you can hear all of our episodes on WindCitySports.com, BorderCityNetwork.com, and wherever podcasts are found, including iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for bearing with us this week. It was a long one and a little bit hard to hear with the boys training in the back, but it's all fun and games. We will be keeping things going, so check us out on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. Give us a follow, like, subscribe, or whatever it may be. Simply search up Wind City Sports or at @WindCity_sports. You can also follow me on Instagram and Twitter @DrakeDamore for whatever reason that interests you. But until next week, smell you later.